Tango Tango Papa 1957, March 19th, 2016.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Wilmer, Texas. Of course, Wilmer is a suburb of Dallas, and so I'm at the company yard here where I am hoping to get my truck worked on. I've been having, well, let's see, the A service is due. It's kind of overdue, actually. But then the big problem I've been having lately is the bunk heater and air conditioner. I can't get them to work consistently. And since then, I've discovered that if I turn the fan down on low and the thing doesn't have to work very hard, that there's a good chance that it'll stay on. But if it, for example, even if I have the fan turned on at the lowest setting, for the bunk air conditioner, for example, if I have it turned to the lowest setting, but the air conditioner has to work too hard, then after a few hours, it may shut off. But if I have the fan, the default when you first turn it on is the fan's, I think, half or three quarters setting. It's got, I think, a total of four or five, probably four settings. You know, it's kind of a digital control with an LED indicator. If it comes out at the default setting, then it may run for a minute before it shuts off. And that includes both the heat and the air conditioner. And right now I'm kind of in between. This evening, now right now I do have it actually. Let's see if it's still running. I think it's still running. Maybe it turned off. Let me look. Nope, it's still running. I've got it in the heating position. It's supposed to get down into the 40s here in the Dallas area this evening or tonight. Now, when I was in California, of course, it was in the 80s. So, and then I was in Houston yesterday, and it was like 84 yesterday afternoon when I was down in Houston. And then it turned colder, a cold front kind of came through and knocked the temperature down somewhat. So, it's got to be fixed, because we're, even right now, we're still going to have some colder weather, but we're also going to have some warmer weather, and especially with the warmer weather, it has to be working, because there's times when my timetable kind of gets turned upside down, and I have to sort of sleep into the daytime. Well, if the sun's barreling down and it's hot outside, then gotta have an air conditioner, because I can't, if I'm sweating, I can't sleep. It's just not gonna happen. So the heating and the air conditioning for the bunk have to work if I'm gonna be productive. That's just all there is to it. So it's got to be fixed, and so I'm going to have to sit here. I got here, I had a load that they had, I unloaded yesterday down in Katy, Texas, which is a western suburb of Houston, and then ended up later in the evening, that was yesterday evening, picking a load up at, Missouri City, Texas, which is another, that's a southern suburb of Houston. And then that load actually goes to Wichita, Kansas, but they had me drop it here at the Wilmer Yard, which was right along the way. And so I, as soon as I got here this afternoon, I went inside the shop and wrote the truck up, and I don't know, I think maybe they'll get to it tomorrow. Because I didn't really ask. I just said, well, there, you know, when I first checked in, I said, well, is it okay? I doubt if you're going to get this to this till tomorrow. I'm going to go drive somewhere and to get something to eat. And the gal that was doing the checking in said, yeah, that's fine, no problem. So hopefully they'll get to it tomorrow, being tomorrow is Sunday the 20th, I believe. Yep. So, but it's got to be fixed. Even if I have to sit here for a day or two, it has to be fixed. Because the weather is inevitably going to get warmer as the, you know, as it marches forward. So, gotta be fixed. So sometimes there's a certain amount of sitting around that I have to do at one of these company terminals, and that's just the way it is. So there's always some sort of downtime. For maintenance. So I have a voice file, voice feedback from Mark, and I've also got a couple of an email and then another little message. So let's see, I'm going to do the message first. Where is it at? Okay, it would be right there. And so this is from Dave, and it was he says, right on, Tom. You do a great job. Been listening for years. Very smart man. And that's from Dave. So thank you, Dave. And then I have an email here from Ian. And Ian is kind of, I'll just read what Ian says. With the uptick in popularity of Trump and Sanders, is this an indication that people of the United States want to change the power structure to the point of changing the capitalism model? I guess I'm asking, what is the end game for frustrated people? And that's from Ian. And you know, so what? I'll read what I wrote back. The pundits you're listening to are reading too much into it. Bernie lovers, meaning Bernie Sanders, are easy to understand. He appeals to the spoiled. Bernie appeals to adult infants. And that's what you can think of him as, adult infants. There may be a term for that, I don't know, but the two words describe them. They're adult infants. Trump is a vehicle of voter revolution. Multiply me times millions. I am frustrated to no end by the Republican politicians who sound like me, effectively enough to get my vote, but then push through a detrimental globalist agenda once elected. The Karl Rove Republican bait and switch has stopped working. And so that was my response back to Ian. So what is the end game? You know, why, you know, it's obvious what the Sanders people want. These so-called millennials and, you know, the adult infants that are fail to mature, that are that are showing up at these Sanders events. They want someone to keep putting the worm in their mouth, like the baby, you know, classic example, you know, picture in your mind, you got the baby bird, a bunch of baby birds in the nest clamoring, you know, with their little beaks stuck straight up, waiting for mama to come put a worm in it. And of course, mama does, but at some point, mama shoves them out of the nest. Now, you know, in human terms, if human beings spoil their kids, you know, kind of giving them and giving them and giving them, you know, when you have an infant, you know, you have a little tiny infant, you know, you got to feed it, you got to do everything for it because it can't do anything for itself. And if it, you know, so the parents have to take care of it or it's going to die. You have an infant, you got to feed it, you got to clean the waste because it soils itself, you got to clean the waste up, you got to bathe it, you got to keep it warm. Got to make sure it's got plenty of liquids, got plenty to eat, etc., etc., etc. And there's a lot involved in taking care of an infant. And you have to. But at some point, the idea with an infant is that you train the infant to be able to take care of itself. Now, once you see the problem is that parents sometimes have a tendency, oftentimes it seems, to keep giving and giving, and they give them money, and here's the money for the Xbox. Here, I'm going to buy you an Xbox, and you've got a computer, and you've got all kinds of smartphones, and God knows whatever else. Just stay out of my hair. Go into your room and lose yourself in the, you know, in the internet or whatever it is you do. And just leave me alone. You know, I'm going to watch my game or whatever. And they keep giving and giving and giving and giving. And they fail. Of course, the parents don't have any values. Their parents failed them. And unless the child, as sometimes happened, sometimes people can be born into these situations and realize something's wrong with the way that they've been brought up, the way that they exist, and they begin to ask questions on their own, then they can get out of it. But there's, in many cases, people are brought up that way and they're despoiled and they've been robbed of kind of figuring things out for themselves. They've been robbed of learning the value of working, the value of, you think of work as some drudgery, but work, you're actually giving, you're sort of giving of yourself. You're serving other human beings in a sense. You're giving of yourself at the same time that those other people are giving of themselves. And then, of course, there's a multiplying effect. Everybody benefits from that. And if you're taught to work in the proper way, then you feel a sense of accomplishment, a sense of satisfaction that you cannot get any other way. But parents that spoil their kids rob the kids of that. And the kids know that they've been robbed. They can't really verbalize it. But they, you know, and they're often angry at the parents. And so you have the classic thing where the child hates the parent that just keeps giving them and giving them and giving them, you know, sort of, you know, and that's where biting the hand that feeds you comes from. He or she is biting the hand that feeds them. And so the parents have failed the kids, they've spoiled them, and then the spoiled kids are looking for government to take over where the parents left off. They want to keep the adult infants want to keep the worms coming. And they don't want to have to do anything for it because they don't even understand that they're the losers. You know, intellectually they don't understand. They think that Somehow it's just magically if the government prints money and that just stuff just comes from somewhere, you know, and they don't have a clue. So it's easy to understand the Sanders. It's just malparenting, poor parenting has created that. Several generations worth of poor parenting has created the sort of the Bernie Sanders generation of adult infants clamoring for socialists like Bernie Sanders to take from people that are productive and give to the slovenly, to the slothful. So that's easy to understand. Now, they do, you know, they want socialism, you know, and until if they ever actually got it, I think they changed their tune. If they really got what they thought that what real socialism is, I don't think they'd be very happy with it. I've been watching. There's a ton of documentaries about communism, You know, and it's, I find it interesting, fascinating. It's kind of endlessly fascinating. But you look at the history of the Soviet Union, and, you know, and of course they're socialists. You know, you think, well, it's communists, socialists, Union of Socialist Soviet Republics. So they were socialists. And the history of those countries isn't, you know, it's not very pretty. I've been reading a book called The Naked Communist that was written, I believe it was published about 19, well, it was published maybe in the late 50s or around 1960, and then it, I think it was updated around 1961. And so I've been listening to that, the audiobook version of it. Really one of the best books I've come across in maybe ever, or certainly in a long time. And if you really want to gain an understanding as much as possible, philosophically and in actuality, what communism is, what did Karl Marx, what did he teach? What was he writing about? What did he envision? And it's, you know, a lot of people, there's people that can be sort of ensnared by that. It's based on a fallacy, several fallacies, several false ways of thinking. And, of course, in practice, it doesn't work. The Marxism does not, it doesn't function the way Karl Marx thought that it might. So, you know, hence you had the Soviet Union, and socialism just does not work. If it's, you know, it can't work. As he envisioned it, it's ends up repressing people, stifling people's desire to do anything, to live their lives, and then you end up with just terrible mediocrity and poverty. And an oppressive government. Socialism ends up creating criminals. If you know, the idea being that, you know, oh, we're going to get rid of religion and we're just going to have a bunch of atheists and there is no right and there is no wrong. Well, you just end up, if you try to raise your children that way with no values, with no sense of right and wrong, you're raising criminals. That's all. Because why else? I mean, if there's no reason to do right and wrong, then why would you, what's stopping you from doing wrong? What's stopping you from being a criminal? There's nothing. You know, and the idea, well, we're going to have some nebulous belief in government and everything, and everybody's going to believe and it's all, we're all going to be motivated by our beliefs. It doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. You can't replace real God-given motivation, cannot successfully be replaced with man-made worship of government. It just won't work, and it can't work. It's been tried over and over again. I know each successive generation thinks, well, communism or socialism, it just hasn't quite been done right. We're good people. We're going to be the ones that do it the right way. And, of course, it ends in failure every time. So, now, the getting back to Ian's question, what about the Trump people? We know, you know, I've explained the Sanders people. Just think of adult infants wanting to continue their infancy into their adulthood. What about the Trump people? You know, people like me. Why do I support Donald Trump? Do I want, you know, because then they try to say, now, if you watch the media, there's a lot of them. He's not conservative. He's not a real conservative, and he's gonna, you know, he wants some socialism, and he's a strong man, and God knows whatever else they're trying to say in order to discredit him. And what you have to remember, it's not about Donald Trump; it's about the Trump supporters. You know, what is it? about me and millions of other people that appeals, that Donald Trump appeals to. He's, like it or not, you may not like it, you're seeing a genuine American. He's not perfect. Nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. So Donald Trump isn't either. But what Donald Trump does have that really appeals to a lot, you know, that appeals to me certainly and appeals to a lot of people, he's, for one thing, he fights back. You know, these ridiculous politically correct weapons don't work against Donald Trump. Why don't they work against Donald Trump? Is there something special about Trump? No. There's something, any more than there's something special about the people that are that like him and vote for him. Do politically correct weapons work with me? Hell no. And they don't work with all of the people I know. They don't, you know, those politically correct weapons do not work, and that's why they're not working against Donald Trump. You know, there are people that are spending hundreds of millions of dollars to try to defeat Trump. And so far, it's been an utter failure. They might as well have saved their money. And in fact, I believe that the more they push and try to discredit him, it has the opposite effect. So everything that's been tried against him causes his, you know, causes him to have more support. So what's the end game? What do I want to see from a Trump presidency? Do I think that all of the country's problems are going to be solved? No, I don't. However, I think that he can certainly make a big dent in it, and he's certainly turning things upside down. Because the government, the way it is and the way it has been before Ronald Reagan and certainly after Ronald Reagan, and primarily after Ronald Reagan, the way the government has been has just been terrible. You have all of these cronies that get in there, and they're in there kind of for life, and you know, they just keep getting reelected and reelected and reelected. There's all kinds of political corruption. You know, they say one thing to the voters, then they do, when they get in there, they do something different. And of course, they've thrown the borders open. Everybody in. We want everybody to come in. And these ridiculous trade deals where factories are kind of going to China, Mexico and God knows wherever else, and then, you know, where these companies are employing people for slave wages, basically, in poor, in backwards countries like China or Mexico, and that's got to stop. It has to stop. So Trump is right on, you know, he's got a lot of support because of the border situation. If you don't have borders, you don't have a country. And, you know, you can rest assured Mexico's not, doesn't just allow anybody to just walk in. You know, you try to, as an American, you try to go into Mexico illegally and see if you end up in a Mexican jail. You know, see how that works for you. So we've got to seal the border off. And that's not to say I don't want any immigrants. Immigrants are fine if they're legal. L-E-G-A-L. Legal. Let's have legal immigrants. I don't, you know, I respect people that do things lawfully and legally. But this illegal stuff, forget it. You know, legal immigrant has to assimilate. And that's all there is to it. You can call it whatever you want, xenophobic or whatever. But legal immigration is fine. Illegal immigration has to come to a stop. So we do need to build a wall with Mexico. Just to put up a border wall, and that's that. And then you have legal immigration. And it has nothing to do with, I like Mexicans. You know, I like Mexican food. You know, I know a bunch of Mexicans, but I want legal Mexican immigrants. So he's right on that issue. That's a huge issue. And one that's been festering for years and years and years. He's strong on the Second Amendment. He is wants to do away with the Common Core, so-called Common Core education. What's that? Now, that's clever wording. Oh, it sounds so good. Common Core. You know, but it's really clever wording, but it just means that they want everybody to think alike. They want everybody to think just like, good little globalists, little mindless drones. So that's really when you hear the term Common Core, it means dumb them down and turn them into good little idiots that are, kind of go along with the globalism. Sort of do away with the borders, and we're going to have one world communist government or one world socialist government. That's what these people that have wormed their way into power want, and that's what Trump is standing against. And there's probably a few other issues, but and another one is bring back the tariffs. You know, if a company like the example that he loves to give is Carrier builds their plant in Mexico, well, fine and dandy. Put a slap a 35% tariff on every air conditioning or heating unit that they want to bring back in, that they want to bring into the United States and sell at a massive profit, because they're paying slave labor in Mexico, slave labor wages. Slap a 35% tariff on it. That'll put a stop to it. You know, it's ridiculous what we've allowed to happen. There are company after company after company has been leaving the United States and going to China or wherever else. Ford's another one. It's got to stop. So that's the end game. And so is Trump going to get all of these things accomplished? I don't know, but he's got a pretty good chance, because he doesn't back down. He does not, when people try to fight with him unfairly, he turns the tables on them. So I would say if there's a President Trump, there's a really good chance that he's going to get his way on a lot of things. He's going to be able to make a lot of these things happen. He's going to upset a lot of apple carts. And that's what people like me want. I want the apple carts overturned. I want things really turned topsy-turvy. Things have to be shaken up severely. If we even stand a chance as a country of surviving. And as a world, really, because the United States is the last holdout. You know, you think the last bastion, real bastion of freedom. So, like that or not, don't care. As I've said many times, sometimes people have to, and if they're going to change their behavior, they have to end up in the gutter, literally or figuratively. Got to be some sort of shock. Some people will be happy to die in the gutter, but then there are other people that they've kind of got the shock of being there, laying there in the gutter, and they start thinking rational thoughts. And that really has to happen. there's a lot of people that have to go through the shock, and they've had their way for years, year after year. These people have had their way. And so, you know, today I was watching a live stream of a Trump event in, where was it? Fountain Hills, Arizona, down by Phoenix. And these protesters, these so-called protesters, they're really criminals, blocked the road. They blocked a main road that was leading to this, where, you know, I think it was a golf course, Fountain Hills, where the venue was, where he's going to speak at. And so they got out there and they blocked the road with their vehicles. They had their banners tied to the vehicles, and then they chained themselves to the vehicles. Well, that's not protesting. That's criminal. When you block a main highway like that, that's criminal action. That is not protesting. That's criminal. They should be treated as criminals. There were three people that were arrested. Of course, it was cleared up pretty quickly, I think. And the traffic was flowing again. And I think about 25,000 people showed up at the Trump event. Then Trump showed up and he spoke. And spoke for around 45 minutes. And people seemed pretty happy. So, but hopefully the vehicles were confiscated and the three of them were arrested. And, you know, I don't know if they go to jail or somebody has to post bond or whatever. But they're criminals. You know, criminals are criminals. It's one thing to protest. It's another thing when you start blocking things and blocking highways and that sort of thing. That's criminal. That's criminal activity. It should be treated as such. So, anyway, I'm going to go ahead now and play Mark's comment. So here is Mark.
Hey, Tom, this is Mark. I was responding to one of your previous podcasts. I think Jill might have brought up the topic of what kids do, not wanting to buy cars when they're 16. And I've noticed this too. It is kind of strange because back in my days, and I'm 45, I turned 16 back in the 80s, and so everybody wanted a car back then. It's the moment they turned 16. I remember that. And I think the difference why they don't do that today is because of social media. Back then, the platform for social media was the car, and their actual media was going out cruising and meeting people. There's no such thing as mobile phones or anything like that. I think the closest thing anybody could have to social media back then in technology might have been a CB radio, and that, of course, they're not going to be cool with that at all. But it would also have been their phone, and families had a single phone, so mom and dad or sister was on the phone. You couldn't really have it all to yourself. And so you had to have a car to get away and, you know, meet your people. You know, back then, you remember people would cruise all these little towns and stuff. They'd have a place to go, like Walmart or the state park or, you know, some little strip where people would go just cruise for hours back and forth. And, you know, cops had to come break it up. And that doesn't really exist today. It's hard for me, at least, to find places to cruise anymore. Kids just don't do it because they don't need to. You know, they get on Google Hangouts or Facebook or Snapchat or what have you, and that's where they hang out. My daughter, when she talks to her friends, she's up in her bedroom FaceTiming her friend, and they'll talk to each other for hours like that. It'll come time where she needs a car, my son needs a car, and they might get it, and they'll just have no interest, I'm sure. And I think technology is a big factor of that. And I know you said the school system might have been a factor in that as well, from an environmental point of view or whatever. But maybe, I don't know. But I think social media really has a bigger part to do with that. Anyway, just wanted to comment on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark. That's why, by the way, Mark's right. That is why, whenever I talk about kids, usually I always put out the disclaimer that I am not a parent. I'm 61 years old. I am not a parent, never have been a parent, never will be a parent. You know, and so I disarm myself because, and for good reason, because I'm not a parent. Now, what if I were a parent today, then I would know this about social media. I was talking to my youngest brother, who is a stepfather, you know, and he's around kids. And he's got stepkids and he's got grandkids. And he is very well aware of the social media thing and, you know, causing the, you know, kind of taking up all of the time and causing the kids not to want to, you know, to drive or cruise, because I remember the cruising. I remember kind of even taking part in some of it way back in the day. And it was, that would have been way back in the late 60s, early 70s, if you can believe that. But that's it. That is it. It is the, you know, the social media, you know, the kids are, you know, they're spending all their time kind of glued to their phones, probably glued to Facebook or Snapchat or, you know, whatever it is that they're, whatever it is that the, you know, the kids are glued to these days on their phones. And that's it. So that really is what has sort of usurped the wanting a car and the kind of cruising behavior, because they were wanting to be with their friends. And so that makes perfect sense. And so, again, if I was a parent, then I would know these things, but I'm not. So, you know, I'm just kind of a detached observer. And maybe too detached in certain ways. So, it's obvious then, it's the social media that's doing this. Now, is that begs some other questions that are maybe not related, but one of the questions people ask today, is it healthy for the kids to spend so much time kind of glued to their mobile device screens? Is that really a healthy thing? That's really a good question. One of the behaviors that especially teenagers engage in is, and certainly probably with the cruising phenomena that used to exist, kids were sort of practicing being adults. Because, you know, when I was a kid, before I was old enough to get a driver's license, I remember thinking, you know, just couldn't wait to get a driver's license. You know, because having a driver's license and being able to drive around and kind of go where you wanted, when you wanted, represented a type of, I don't know, I thought of it as a type of freedom. And I think beyond that, you kind of got to practice being an adult. Now, if you're a kid today, and you're sort of glued to your smartphone and the the question then is, in the old days, you know, maybe you were wanting your friends, but you also, as a byproduct of that, you got to sort of practice being an adult. Is that, you know, kind of the substitute of being glued to a smartphone, is that a very effective way of practicing being an adult? Is that an effective way of practicing adulthood? Is that an effective way of practicing maturity? Now, in part, regardless of the method, the parents have to be an influence. So, I'm thinking out loud here. I think the medium itself, whether it's back in the old days, you had your car and you were sort of cruising around and maybe hanging out in a parking lot somewhere, that was one thing, you know, sort of one method of hanging, you know, kind of socializing, practicing kind of being an adult. That was one method versus, you know, today they're on Facebook and they're hanging, you know, they've got the, you know, they're whatever, and that's how they're sort of. You know, hanging out on, you know, like Google Hangouts or whatever, and that's sort of filling in for the what used to be on the single family line telephone. They'd spend hours on the phone, especially I think teenage girls would spend hours on the telephone. So, you know, comparing those, you know, just sort of putting those two things in the same category. Both of them require influence of the parents. Because if the parents, I would say this, if the parents are doing a good job of being a good influence, and to some extent a containing influence on the kids, then, you know, to sort of, you know, in the sense that you're not going to let your toddler run out into the road because he doesn't know any better. You have to restrain him or her, and you have to, you know, when they get to the teenage years, you've got to restrain them from engaging in sex and kind of, you know, because they can get themselves into bad trouble that way. You know, the parent is there to help restrain them and et cetera, to keep them out of trouble. So, regardless of the method or the medium that they're engaging their friends with, the parents have to be there as a modifying influence, sort of on the environment that the kids are born into. The parents should be a modifying influence. So, I would say that the technology part and the having the internet and so that type of thing and the smartphones, I would say that's not necessarily a bad thing as opposed to what it was before the internet existed. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It's just improved communication. And that's one thing that always improves with technology is communication improves. So, but then the parent has to be there as a modifying influence. So, again, we go back to the problem of the parents. Are the parents doing their jobs? And then, of course, in many cases, they are not. The parents are failing to do their jobs. The parent, you know, there was a book, The Naked Communist that I'm listening to. The audible version of it, there's an update by the guy's son that wrote the book. I think the last name Skousen. The guy's son sort of, you know, put out this book, you know, again in 2015 with a, you know, with an addendum on the end of it, and he was saying that 30% of kids today in American households don't know who the dad is. 30%. That's incredible. There's no dad. That's outrageous. And not only do they have that strike against them, but then they've got all this improved communication where they can really get themselves into trouble. And there's no dad present to help being to help be a modifying influence. So it really does kind of go back to the parents. But if you're looking for a good book to either read or listen to, the name of the book is it's The Naked Communist. And I think the guy that wrote that, what was his name? I could look it up. Didn't realize I was going to be talking about it. So let me go ahead and see if I can look it up quickly. All right. The Naked K-E-D Communist. There it is. Okay. 1958 book by an ex-FBI agent. His name was, Cleon, C-L-E-O-N, Skousen, S-K-O-U-S-E-N. And it's really an excellent book because it really, in a very concise way, it, you know, tells you exactly what communism is and sort of explains Karl Marx philosophy behind it. And, you know, it kind of really, really lays it out there for you in a concise manner that's really quite understandable. And that it, you know, it either appeals to you or it doesn't. You know, and of course, he also, a good chunk of the book is devoted to, you know, kind of communism's influences. They had 45 goals. You know, originally the Russians had 45 goals to sort of be able to, you know, if they achieved those goals, they thought they'd be able to take down the United States of America. By the way, 44 of them have long since been accomplished. so we're well on the way to ruin as a nation, even though it's fascinating because, of course, communism, because of Ronald Reagan, communism ended up kind of crumbling apart. And if you look nowadays, of course, the news media tries to make Russia and President Putin out to be terrible villains. But one of the things that's happened with Russia that the media is not talking about it is, the Russian Orthodox Church has come roaring back to life. Christianity in Russia has come roaring back to life. You know that of course, one of the things with a communist, you know, they wanted to get rid of religion. In order to be a good communist, a good socialist, you have to be an atheist. You know, the two are incompatible. And they'll, you know, in their writings, and of course, they use the writings and the, you know, et cetera, of, you know, in the publications of, you know, Marx and some of the, you know, and the Soviet communists. They basically said, you can't be a Christian and be a communist. You know, can't do it. You can't be a good socialist and be a Christian or believe in any kind of God. You have to, you know, they wanted you to believe in the state. The state is God. So, it's, but that's a really excellent book. Even if you think you like socialism, go, you know, it's still useful to understand. So, but in any case, he wrote this book, The Naked Communist, and so, as I say, I'm currently listening to it. They're also, I don't know if they're on Audible, but I'll, they may or may not be, that he wrote The Naked Socialist. He wrote another one called The Naked Capitalist, which should be interesting. But I'll be checking those out, you know, in coming months, because I'm still on the Audible plan where I have one book per month. And so the Naked Communist was my book for this month. And this month, well, we're pushing toward, you know, we're two-thirds away through March now. So, so I'll probably, the next one I'll get would be The Naked Socialist. But it's really good to understand what these things are, because these terms are thrown around. I've thrown the terms around. What do they really mean? What's the philosophy behind them? How does that philosophy appeal to people? What is the appeal? You know, so it's really fascinating, to try to understand these different philosophies. It's really useful. So, anyhow, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. Hope everyone is having a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.